I'm Brady Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, despite raising taxes exponentially, apparently Washington State is facing a budget shortfall. Sounds like a spending problem. Plus, a rich environmentalist is big mad about a new ad in the race for public lands commissioner, and a group is seeking exceptional white men to help fight for social justice and Kamala Harris. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, what is an exceptional white man? You can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Record, all of you are exceptional white men. Even if you're women, I have dubbed you exceptional white men. Nicole, you're an exceptional white man.
Oh.
I don't know. Honored, we'll get into what exactly. You could be part of this group that's forming to coalesce behind Kamala Harris and social justice issues.
I'd rather you dub me that.
It's going to be like a big old low-T commercial. Anyway, oh God, too much. I'm Brady Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. We appreciate every single one of you. A particular thank you to Undivided subscribers who help us do this show 5 days a week. We love it. Reminder, we're going to have another Get Out the Vote event coming up this Saturday in Steilacoom, which isn't Steilacoom, just Lakewood? Or is it its own kind of thing? I guess I should know this, right? Because some people are saying it's Lakewood, Brandy, but no, we're going to Steilacoom. Same thing. Whatever. Close
area,
enough. So we're going to be out sign waving, door knocking, not only for Dave Reichert, for the initiatives, and also for Kelly Chambers, the next Pierce County executive, because we do not want Pierce County to become King County. Well, you shouldn't want that. Some people might, and that's disappointing. All right. So, you know, the initiatives to me are one of the big unknowns. You know, there's a lot of races where I feel a certain way, but yeah, I kind of have steeled myself for potential outcomes. The initiatives, if they weren't so confusing the way they were written on the ballot, I really feel as if they would all be complete no-brainers. Vote yes, pay less. But I think there's been a lot of confusion around not only the way that they're written, but just what you do with an initiative. I think people tend to vote no. Nicole, can you pull up? I just dropped it in. For instance, Let's Go Washington pushed out this tweet, vote yes on all four ballot initiatives. That's it. That's the tweet. And there was this woman who responded and said, no, I voted no. We taxpayers have had enough with zero accountability or oversight of funds. We voted red. To which I'm like, oh no, Linda, no. Vote yes.
Oh no.
But it sounds like she already turned them in. Now, I don't know if this is like a leftist with a troll account. It didn't look like a troll account to me trying to mislead people. But this is what I'm worried about. This is what I'm worried about, that people who aren't as sort of in tune with things don't know that they need to vote yes to pay less, that they need to vote yes to have some accountability for their tax money, et cetera. Sounds like it's too late for Linda. I hope it's not too late. I know. It really concerns me.
That breaks my heart. But honestly, the descriptions in there also, I mean, it's like you're going to kill a kid.
That's what I said. It's like
by voting no.
It literally says, like, it doesn't literally, but it's like, oh, babies and kittens will die if you vote yes. I mean, they really make it confusing. But when it comes to this just tweet, I mean, it stung to me because she said, we the taxpayers have had enough with zero accountability or oversight of funds. So, you know, we voted no. And I'm thinking, oh, no, because that's really what the initiatives are about. It's about accountability and oversight of funds. And it's about telling the government enough. Your budget has grown exponentially. Your revenue has grown exponentially. Our taxes have grown exponentially. And what more are we getting for it? Not only are we not getting any more for it as taxpaying citizens, the state is actually worse off. And I think one of the things, this just came out yesterday, that really stuns me is despite all this new revenue, think about this, new tax on capital gains, the Climate Commitment Act, all the money that's bringing in because you're paying more, that the state is bringing into its coffers because you're paying more at the gas pump. The long-term care tax that's been coming out of your paycheck every single month toward a program you probably don't even want. I mean, all of these things that are going on, and the state of Washington still doesn't have enough money. Because as it brings in more revenue, it just bloats. It grows the size of government to the point where the Washington Research Council, and I was afraid of this. I mean, I kind of expected it, but they came out, and this is a nonpartisan organization. that's dedicated to fiscal oversight and responsibility and just looking at the numbers of the money coming in, money going out. Money coming in, money going out. And what they have said is that Washington faces an estimated $5.1 billion shortfall. And they don't mince words here. It's not because we've hit some sort of economic downturn. It's because the state has a spending problem. It says revenues did not unexpectedly drop due to a recession. Instead, the estimated $5.1 billion shortfall for 2025-2027 is the result of choices made by the legislature. It says it's going to outline more about how this happened in an upcoming brief, but it says in short, this is very simple. In short, the state increased spending even as it knew revenues would come in more slowly. Further, the legislature used reserves to increase general spending. As a result, remaining reserves are expected to be insufficient to cover the shortfall. And when it talks about this increased spending, this line to me, I had to pick out of this report. It said, before the 2013-2015 budget, average biennial growth in per capita spending adjusted for inflation was 0.1%. So the average spending per citizen, essentially, was before 2013, about the increase, about 0.1%. That's pretty modest, and that's even accounted for inflation. Since 2013-2015, the average growth every biennium has been 7.6%. So since 2013, and what happened in 2013? I mean, since 2013, we've really had complete Democratic control in Olympia. It's been increasingly unchallenged. So Democrats have grown their majorities in the House and the Senate. Of course, we've had a Democrat in the governor's office for 40 years. But as their majorities have increased and solidified, their spending has gotten completely out of control. To the point where before that, we're maybe talking about 0.1% increases in the biennial budget every 2 years. And now the average is 7.6%. And they have all these new taxes. Again, go back to think about all the new taxes that they have passed to pay for all these things they say are completely necessary that they've just come up with in the last 10 years. Between capital gains, the CCA, the long-term care tax, all of that going on. And they still can't manage their money. They still don't have enough money for all the things they want to spend it on. There was this chart included in this Washington Research Council report, which I think is very informative. It says this is not a revenue shortfall. Budget shortfalls can occur when revenues unexpectedly drop due to a recession. But in the current case, biennial revenues have not declined, but rather spending growth has outpaced normal revenue growth. Wow. Is that not budgeting 101? You know, spending growth has outpaced normal revenue growth. It says adjusted for inflation, state spending per capita grew substantially coming out of the Great Recession. And you can see it if you're watching the show today, not listening. The revenue growth on the chart is it's just going off the charts. So they have more than enough. And look, the basic needs of a populace and what the government should be focused on, those haven't changed. The basic needs of a populace, maybe some things like growth that have led to transportation challenges where, hey, we've got to put more money in transportation to update outdated infrastructure. We've got more people on the roadways, et cetera, et cetera. But it does not account for that significant of a growth in spending. What that accounts for is runaway spending where they're spending a ton of your money on pet projects and things that are just like the homelessness crisis. I mean, Governor Inslee, this is a perfect example. Homelessness has gotten worse than ever. So, of course, what does the government say? Well, it's worse than ever. So now we need to spend more money on it than ever, which you might think, well, that kind of makes sense, right? If you've got more homeless people, you're going to have to spend more money. But then you've got things like Governor Jay Inslee's right-of-way initiative, where he's like, we're going to clean up those homeless camps along the state freeways, and we're going to get them all looking spiff. But then you do the numbers and you realize they were spending almost $1 million per person to remove them from a right-of-way and get them out of homelessness. That's how you get to a situation like this, where you have more taxes than ever before, taking more money from people than ever before, where you have more spending than ever before, and you still don't have enough money to maintain all the programs that you have in place. Because you're just wasting it. And things aren't getting any better. I mean, it's that old question, like, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Is our state better off today than it was 4 years ago? Is our state better off today than it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago? The answer has to be no. Crime's worse, homelessness is worse, drug abuse is worse, affordability is worse, traffic is worse, transportation is worse. In every metric, things are worse. And you know what else is worse? The environment. You know, Governor Inslee is supposed to be the climate governor, and they're pushing all these things they say will help, but he hasn't met any of his climate goals. Carbon emissions are actually up. Recycling's actually down. All of these things we said, we're going to set this lofty goal and do this and, you know, push all these taxes through that are going to help the environment. It hasn't helped the environment at all. So they will tax you as much as you're willing to be taxed without holding them accountable. And that's what there's nothing that could sum up better why we need to say yes to all those initiatives. And you might be saying, well, Brandy, now they're facing a $5.1 billion shortfall. So if we pass all those initiatives and we repeal the tax on capital gains, we repeal the Climate Commitment Act, we make the long-term care tax optional, isn't that going to make this budget deficit even worse? Yeah, it is. Heard it here, folks. Yeah, it is. But the thing is it's going to force them to reevaluate their priorities. They are not going to be able to spend billions of dollars on these failed climate policies. They're going to have to actually do what a family does, look at their budget, look at the necessities, and strip away the last 10 years of runaway spending. And that's the accountability portion. It's like, yeah, I'm saying it right here. They are going to be in a financial pickle. If all these initiatives pass, the state of Washington will be in a financial pickle. But it's one of their own making. They deserve it. State lawmakers deserve to have to go to Olympia and sit in their little dome and make some hard decisions, just like families do when they go around their dinner table and sit down with their spouse and make hard financial decisions. Your budget hasn't bloated in this way over 10 years since the recession. And yet we continue to elect people who take more and more and more money from us without any results. And despite all the money we've given them, new taxes passed just in the last 5 years, they still can't create a balanced budget with it. They're still facing a $5.1 billion shortfall. And what are they going to do? They're going to come to you and they're going to ask for more money. So this is exactly what's going to happen. If we don't pass the initiatives, you know, the very first thing they're going to do to try to close this $5.1 billion shortfall, any guesses? They're going to reduce the threshold for capital gains. If the capital gains tax remains in effect, if the initiative isn't successful to repeal it, the very first thing they'll do is say, we're facing this $5.1 billion shortfall. Woe is us. They'll probably blame the pandemic. Oh, it's pandemic related. They refuse to be introspective. And they will say, we have to reduce the threshold for capital gains. And it'll no longer be about taxing the richest 2%. It'll be about finding a way, a backdoor income tax, to tax every single one of you. And create your primary home will be a capital gains. They'll reduce the threshold like they already tried before from taxing people who only get $250,000 or more in profit on the sales of stocks and bonds. They'll reduce it to $15,000, which remember, they already tried to do that once. So look at how the pieces are shaping up. They're coming together. If you just will look at it, if you'll pay attention, spending's out of control. They're still outspending what they're bringing in despite all the new taxes because they spend money on utter nonsense, only for the school system to be failing, spending more money on schools than ever before, yet all our test scores are in the toilet, spending more money on transportation than ever before, look at transportation infrastructure, spending more money on homelessness, substance abuse, mental health than ever before. Nothing they're doing is working. Because they don't really care if it's working as long as they can bring more money in. And the truth is, if something's failing and it's so bad that it's impacting your life, like public safety, you know, they stripped law enforcement of the ability to do their jobs. Now we have the lowest number of police officers per capita of any state in the nation, down hundreds of state troopers, down 700 Seattle police officers. And what are they doing? Well, things are so bad, they're hoping you're desperate enough to give them more money. What did Bob Ferguson say his plan is? To throw immediately $100 million at police staffing. Where do you think that money comes from? You and I. So they make things so bad, they make you so desperate that then they hope that you'll give them more money and they'll just dole it out to their cronies and allies and it won't actually make the problem better. Like homelessness. What did Jay Inslee say during a State of the State address like 2 years ago now? the fundamental underlying cause of our homeless crisis is a lack of affordable housing, and it's so bad, so if you'll just give me $4 billion, would you give me $4 billion? I promise we'll do better this time. I promise, as the governor who got us into this mess, that if you just give me $4 billion more, I'll get us out of this mess. Which, of course, he won't. Because the issue isn't money. The issue is policy. The issue is policy. And I use Andrea Suarez as a good example with We Heart Seattle. She can go out, clean up homeless camps, connect people to services for a fraction of the costs of the government doing it. It's because that whole industrial complex that they have around homelessness, it's designed to pay people salaries and to create government positions. And those government positions would go away if you solved the crisis of homelessness. And they'll never allow that. So they're never going to solve these things. So by passing the initiatives, yes, we're going to put the state in a financial pickle. But it is a long overdue financial pickle. I just like saying the word pickle. Long overdue financial pickle, where they're going to have to sit down and make tough decisions because the people of this state are going to demand that they do so. And if we do not stop the runaway spending now, if we do not stop the endless taxes now, again, it's just going to get much, much worse. And it will immediately get worse with them lowering the threshold for the tax on capital gains. So be advised. And you know what? Don't say I didn't warn you. I know you guys don't need to know this. I know you all voted yes to pay less, but you need to tell your friends, you need to tell your family, and you need to tell them it's not just about these initiatives. It's about what happens if they don't pass. It's about what happens next. And they will be so emboldened to continue to come up with new ways to tax us, to fund programs and jobs that aren't fixing anything. And the last 15 years is proof of that. I don't know what other proof people would need. All right, I want to talk about a story that went a little viral on social media. And I don't like the false, like, crying wolf over election fraud and election interference. I think that it happened for too long to the point where people tune out concern, real genuine concerns about fraud or opportunities for fraud. And I've talked about this on the show before, like the 2020 election wasn't stolen. Could you go around the country and find individual concerning things that happened here or there? Yeah, wherever there are opportunities for fraud, there are going to be people who try to take advantage of that. But it doesn't mean that it was to the extent where it influenced the outcome of especially a presidential election. So I think the right definitely needs to be better at picking and choosing its battles on election integrity. Like, don't share nonsense stuff on social media that there's no evidence of, because the next time there's actually evidence of something that needs to be taken seriously, people aren't going to listen to you. So I think that's something the right needs to do. But on the left, Democrats need to take concerns about genuine opportunities for fraud seriously and immediately. And they need to make sure that when there are actual individual instances of fraud or attempted fraud, that they seek to throw the book at that person and hold them accountable to the fullest extent of the law. So there's a little bit of give and take that has to happen here if what we all want are fair elections that are free of fraud, free of tampering, etc. So there was a video put out. Are we playing this whole thing, Nicole, or just some key moments? Key moments, okay. So from an ex account, Craig F. I-1968, who went on the King County website through OmniBallot and was able to completely manufacture like a voter name and print off a ballot. Here's a little bit of the video. It was a longer video of them going through all these steps. Here's just a few clips from that video of key moments.
I entered some fake information. I just made up a name and a birthday and entered it into the voter lookup. I used an address that has been suspicious. It's like some kind of homeless services or food bank or something of that sort in Seattle. It brings up this thing that says official ballot. After a moment, it pops up with a box that allows me to download my ballot packet. So I download the ballot packet. I just made an official ballot for a made-up voter using some random name and birthday and entering in an address, and I've got a ballot.
Yeah. So on its face, that's very concerning. Now, I will say I have done that exact process before. It was a few elections ago. I could not find my freaking ballot for the life of me, and I was coming down to the wire, and so I printed off, literally, this, is it a provisional ballot? Is that what they call it? I don't know the official name for it. I printed it off, filled it out, mailed it in, and it worked, right? But I, of course, used my real name and my real address, and I am indeed a registered voter. So on its face, that's very concerning. that you could go on the website, you could just make up a name. I believe the address that she put in there, that 77 Washington, I think is for Union Gospel Mission, isn't it? Or DSC or
something,
some of those.
Like that, yeah,
in Seattle, where there's a lot of homeless people registered to vote, which if you live there and you're a lawful voter, fine. So it is concerning, 100%. We reached out and we sent that video to both the Secretary of State's office and King County Elections. Now, I'm satisfied with their response to an extent. And this is kind of what I would expected them to say. So let's go to the Office of Secretary of State first. They said, before any ballot can be counted, the signature on the returned ballot envelope must match the one on file for a registered voter. While King County's online portal allows voters to print a blank replacement ballot, it does not bypass the required identification and verification of the voter. Each voter must still be identified, their voting status confirmed to ensure they haven't already voted, and their signature must be verified. So they said a ballot that would be returned, like if that X user were to fill that out and send it in, the Secretary of State's office says a ballot returned using fake voter registration information would not be counted. It's also important to remember that it is illegal to cast a ballot or sign a ballot declaration on behalf of another voter, knowingly provide false registration information, or vote more than once in an election. This is explicitly stated in the ballot declaration oath, and anyone found guilty can face a Class C felony charge punishable under state law. So what they're saying is like, yeah, you could download that, you could make up a fake name and a fake address, but as soon as we go to verify that the ballot that was sent in came from a real voter, then you'd be talking about a potential Class C felony for fraud and it wouldn't be counted. So the King County Elections gave us a similar response saying, hey, thanks for reaching out on this. We want to make sure that people get accurate information about it. And they basically say the same thing. What's most important to know is that just because a ballot is printed doesn't mean it will be counted. And then they also talk about how often this happens, which I think is a little important bit of information. To specifically address the video you referenced, if someone were to make up a name and address, they are essentially accessing a provisional ballot, and it would be rejected at the first step noted above. It's pretty rare that we receive a printed ballot back from someone who is not registered. We received two in the August primary out of nearly 560,000 ballots, and they were rejected. So two out of more than 500,000 ballots, but it has happened before. So I had reached out back out after this to the Secretary of State's office with some follow-ups and basically just said like, hey, you know, I get it that there are steps in place to make sure that if someone does that and the ballot is sent in, that it's not counted. But why even allow this to be a possibility in the first place? I think that's my concern, right? Because you're setting up a situation where it opens the door to concerns about fraud. When someone can create a video like that, it's been shared a ton on social media, and it creates skepticism of our voting process. And so why even allow someone, if you're going to be able to print off a ballot, why not have to have a real name and a real address that matches a registered voter? So I asked that of the Secretary of State's office. Their response was, the system allows voters to print a replacement ballot, increasing accessibility for voters whose original ballots have been lost, damaged, or otherwise. And I've done that before, so I understand. It allows them to get a new ballot without having to wait for a replacement to be mailed to them, or physically going to an elections office or voting center to be issued a new one. It's also beneficial to military and overseas voters in areas that do not have reliable mail service. It's important to emphasize that for a printed replacement ballot to be accepted, it must be associated with an active voter registration, verified that the voter hasn't already turned a ballot in, and that the signature matches what's in the voter's registration. The ballot will be rejected if those criteria are not met, but that doesn't answer my question. The question I said is, why even have a system that allows users to create a ballot for someone who isn't a registered voter? My concern is that it just opens the door to runaway theories about election meddling. I said, wouldn't it be possible to prevent the system from generating a ballot for someone who isn't registered? You'd think that'd be easy, right? And that question wasn't answered by the Secretary of State's office, and we'll keep following up to get an answer. Why not just disallow the system to do that? Because if you're not a registered voter, why wouldn't it just say, in order to print a replacement ballot, your information has to match that of a registered voter? Is that not simple? I mean, these are really complex systems already, right? That seems like a very easy thing for them to do, so they don't have to rely on these fail safes, so the ballot's not counted. Now, again, if you do that, and if that person were to mail that ballot in, that is a Class C felony. So, you know, an opportunity for fraud doesn't necessarily mean that you can actually get away with fraud. But it just goes to this, like, if we want people to have faith in our elections and believe they're secure, we should be looking for opportunities to limit even the access to the possibility that you could commit fraud. And that's what I don't understand here. So we'll continue to follow up. Nicole also asked, I don't know if we followed up with King County Elections. Okay, so you said this happened twice in the primary election. Have those people been charged with crimes? Have you gotten a response from them yet on that? Did we follow up yet?
I have not gotten a response yet.
So that seems like a reasonable question, right? If at least two people did that, and that goes back to what I said earlier, is we need to be taking people, you know, throwing the book at people who actually do attempt to commit election fraud. So I want to know what happened and if the King County Elections asked prosecutors to pursue a case against the two individuals who weren't registered voters and who printed off a ballot and mailed it in. That's not asking too much, is it? Otherwise, our election laws mean nothing. Otherwise, people don't have an expectation that when instances of fraud or attempted fraud pop up, that there are consequences for those people. So I think this is one of those issues where, like, both sides have to give and take a little bit. Like, let's not get people all riled up suggesting that anyone can just fill out a ballot with a fake name and it's going to be counted. Because I actually don't think that that's the case. However, there is no reason that King County Elections couldn't stop a non-voter, a non-registered voter from being able to download a ballot and mail it in. Like, just in case, right? Like, just in case. So we're going to continue to look into this, but I am not concerned that people are in any great number able to just mail in a ballot and have it counted. In fact, King County Elections says that didn't happen at all. In the August primary, two people did, and neither of them were actually counted. So this is one of those instances of, like, the system could be made better, but I don't think it's contributing to actual election fraud that's influencing the results of elections in terms of allowing someone to vote who shouldn't be voting. But yeah, keep sending us this stuff. I mean, this is something worth talking about. I'm not saying that this user shouldn't have done what they did and showed the possibility of this happening. I think that's very informative, and it allows us to do our jobs and follow up with elections officials and ask them, hey, can you give us an answer to what's happening here, which they did. And it allows us to just look at individual issues within the system that could maybe be fixed or clarified. So we appreciate it. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about the race for public lands commissioner. Whew, it's getting a little heat right now. There's some ads out that the environmentalists are not so happy about, and they're trying to get taken down. First, I've talked about my success on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program, eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. In fact, I lost 2 years ago on the program between Halloween and Christmas almost 30 pounds. And look, the first 60 days of the program is hard work. You do have to commit to the program for 60 days, but the amount of weight you're able to lose in that period of time is really the motivating factor, where you're like, wow, this is really working. And then at the end of 60 days, if you can commit to some simple lifestyle changes, you can keep the weight off for life. It's not like a magic trick or a fad diet. I saw some commercial on TV the other day for something that said, like, it's going to make you skinny. It's a different program. I'm like, skinny? Like, I'm 36. I'm never going to be skinny again. Like, I love wine and I love chocolate and I don't love to go to the gym. Like, I'm not trying to get skinny again, but I do want to feel confident in my clothes. I want more energy and all those things Eastside Weight Loss Clinic program gave me. So eastsideweightlossclinic.com, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Schedule your free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team today, eastsideweightlossclinic.com. All right, let's talk about the Lands Commissioner race. I told you, I think this is the sleeper one. I mean, this would be really significant if Republicans can take this seat back. I think it would be better for the state of Washington and for our public lands and everyone who rely on them and who enjoy them. So it is Jamie Herrera Butler, a Republican and former congresswoman, against Dave Up the Grove, who is a King County progressive. So you know who I'm supporting in this race, Jamie Herrera Butler. And, you know, right now, Republicans they have no statewide seats on the entire West Coast in terms of statewide elected office. So this could be significant if they're able to regain this. But I think it'll be really, really close. In fact, Jamie Rivera Butler has been able to secure some important endorsements for Republicans, you know, from some of the key newspapers, including the Seattle Times. So I think that can go a long way. But there's this, so she's had a couple ads out, or people on her behalf, that I think have been really, really effective. I'm going to play two of them for you today. This one is interesting. But it was paid for by the Washington State Republican Party. Let's just give it a watch. We'll talk about it on the back end.
Dave Updegrove is too extreme to be Washington's next commissioner of public lands. Just look at his extreme plans for our state lands and the radicals behind him, including his good friend, Brel Froby.
Huge shout out to Brel Froby at Center for Responsible Forestry.
Updegrove's radical buddy, Brel Froby, and the Center for Responsible Forestry want to defund police.
My name is Brel Froby. I'm a member of a coalition to defund the police in Whatcom County.
And they want to make our communities more dangerous. Then there's Joshua Wright, another extreme friend of Dave Updegrove. Wright opposed building a new police station to save Mother Earth and thinks the rich should face the guillotine. Worse, his militant friends want to burn down factories.
Whose lands? Our lands! Whose lands? Our lands!
With radical friends like this, Dave Updegrove is too extreme to be Washington's commissioner of public lands.
I agree. And one of the things I've said is, do you really want a radical Seattle progressive managing our public lands across Washington state? I mean, the answer should be no, I hope. But, you know, tying him to these other individuals who he's spoken with at events, who he's called out by name, who support other radical policies like defunding the police, you know, thinking rich people should face the guillotine, that tells you it's the company you keep to a certain extent. And I've said before, like, I don't remember who we were having the conversation about. I don't think you have to absorb the politics and political beliefs of every single person in your orbit. I don't think that's fair. But these are people tied to environmental groups that are supportive of his campaign. So in this sense, it's a lot different. So anyway, that ad comes out. It's just on social media right now. And a rich environmental attorney immediately sent the Washington State Republican Party a cease and desist. That tells you about how good it is, right? So Peter Goldman, we'll get more into this in a moment. He's an environmental attorney in Seattle. He sent this to the Washington State Republican Party. I'm representing the Center for Responsible Forestry and Brel Froby, who was mentioned in that ad. Dave Updegrove called him out by name. Brel Froby is with the Center for Responsible Forestry, but he's also the one who was on video saying, I support defunding the police. So it says, I'm representing the Center for Responsible Forestry and Brel Froby. The Center for Responsible Forestry and Mr. Froby are extremely concerned about the video that the Republican Party prepared and is displaying via various media in connection with the 2024 Lands Commissioner race. The party's video was clearly made from video belonging to CRF without CRF's permission. The video has been uploaded to CRF's YouTube channel. Based on my initial legal research, not only is this a violation of YouTube's internal policies, but under federal copyright law, the party does not have the legal right to take this video and doctor it into being a political message for the party. The party, of course, has a right to air its political views, but it cannot steal copyrighted work product to do so. We respectfully request that the party cease and desist from using this video in any political advertising. If the party disregards this warning, CRF and Mr. Froby will prosecute a civil copyright infringement action against the party in the future. Kindly assure me that you will honor this request. Thank you very much, Peter Goldman, attorney at law. So this is just ridiculous. I mean, I'm not an attorney. I'm not a political attorney. I'm not an environmental attorney. But I know that this is, first of all, just a ridiculous argument towards cease and desist, that you can't take someone, something that they said, and use it in a political ad. It happens all the time. You watch literally any political ad on TV, and you have all sorts of quote-unquote copywritten material that you could argue is used in there. For instance, news clips. Do you ever see news clips used in political ads? All the time. Where it'll be a clip here, clip from King, clip from Q13, little snippet of the Seattle Times. When you're talking about a political ad, someone running for political office, there is a lot of leeway when it comes to using material that's out there on the internet in that political ad. And look, Mr. Goldman knows that. This is a desperate attempt because that ad is so damn good. But also, Peter Goldman isn't just a regular environmental attorney. There's a reason why he's the one that this Brett Froby and the Center for Responsible Forestry looped in, because Peter Goldman is a well-known, very rich, quote-unquote, environmentalist who basically does stuff like this because he's independently wealthy and he believes in environmental issues, and he wants the most far left, whoever it is running for public lands commissioner. He's always going to support the person who's farthest to the left. And in this case, that's not Jamie Herrera Butler. I was just doing a quick search on him. So he is the director and managing attorney for Washington Forest Law. There were a few old articles about him in other, you know, his involvement in other public lands commissioner races. This from the Seattle Times in 2004. He wrote a $250,000 check in the public lands commissioner race to try to unseat the land commissioner at the time, Doug Sutherland. Let's see, the Seattle PI, back when they actually used to hold far lefties accountable. Rich Enviros fund big independent expenditure in lands commissioner race. That's from 2016, talking, of course, about Peter Goldman. So what's interesting is that Peter Goldman had actually supported Hillary Franz to be lands commissioner. And now I find it so interesting that he is like diametrically opposed to Jamie Herrera Butler being lands commissioner, because even the Seattle Times, Nicole, if we can skip ahead to the Seattle Times endorsement, even the Seattle Times, when it endorsed Jamie Herrera Butler, said she's actually more aligned with Hillary Franz than Dave Upthegrove is. So you have a Democrat and a Republican, and they're saying that actually the Republican in this race, Jamie Herrera Butler, when it comes to key issues, she's more in line with Hillary Franz. For instance, they said Democrat Dave Upthegrove's campaign would bar logging on tens of thousands of acres of trust lands. Republican Jamie Herrera Butler would prioritize increasing restoration work in public forests to reduce wildfire risk in an era of climate change. As such, former U.S. Rep. Herrera Butler's candidacy aligns more closely with the approach of Democrat Hillary Franz, the current commissioner. So I just thought it was interesting that here you have this environmental attorney who'd been supportive of Hillary Franz, and he is jumping on this like really ridiculous cease and desist letter because he doesn't support the campaign of Jamie Herrera Butler, which just tells me that he's someone who wants the most lefty candidate to get the job. So if it's Hillary Franz was the most lefty candidate at the time, now it's Dave Upthegrove who's the most lefty candidate, aligning himself with police abolitionists and people who want to defund the police and all these far left environmental organizations. So the Washington State Republican Party responded to this frivolous cease and desist letter, and they provided us with the email they sent back. It says, it's from Joel Ard, who's their attorney. Peter, I'm generally confused, and I know you've had a lot more time to look over the issue than I have. Help me understand what's going on. One, could you send me a copy of or a link to the original video as to which your client claims a copyright? Could you send me the copyright registration of that video? Could you send me a copy of or a link to the allegedly derivative work as to which you make a copyright claim against my client? Could you explain how the paid-for statement, which I believe was included as required by law, has any relevance to the copyright infringement claims? Your email raises many more questions, but answers to these four questions above seem to be the initial basis for having any kind of conversation about whatever demands your client might have. So the WADGOP is basically like kick rocks. But this comes on the heels of what I think have been a couple really successful and damaging ads from Jamie Herrera, like in favor of support of Jamie Herrera Butler against Dave Upthegrove. Here is an ad that came out just before that one, which actually has been airing on TV.
We have an important choice to make for lands commissioner. King County Councilman Dave Upthegrove presided over 30 million gallons of raw sewage dumped into the Sound. Year after year, beaches closed, shellfish poisoned, a tribal lawsuit threatened, costing taxpayers millions. There's a better choice. Jamie Herrera Butler is a bipartisan leader who protected endangered salmon and is fighting for sustainable timber harvests to prevent wildfires. Vote Jamie Herrera Butler. She'll protect our environment and our tax dollars.
I love that one. It's like toxic waste. What is it? Wait, play the beginning of it again.
We have an important choice to make for lands commissioner. King County Councilman Dave Upthegrove presided over 30 million gallons of raw sewage
raw
dumped
sewage.
Into the Sound.
Okay.
Year after
yeah,
year,
I mean,
you're
running for public
closed.
Lands commissioner being tied to raw sewage being dumped into the Sound. That's probably not a good thing. So those two ads are really effective. That's why this rich environmental attorney is losing his mind. And I guarantee, this is just a guess, but my gut tells me that this Brent Froby, what was his name? Hold on. Brell Froby, who was featured in that first video, a clip of him saying, I support defunding the police. I guarantee that it wasn't his idea to send the WAGOP a cease and desist. I guarantee it was Peter Goldman's idea to send the WAGOP a cease and desist. And he reached out to them. I guarantee it. This is my opinion. But proactively, I'm couching that because he's an attorney and, you know, I don't want him to sue me. But I guarantee he reached out to them and said, hey, I'm going to send a cease and desist on your behalf because he's so entangled in all of these issues. So one important thing, and this is, I think, we could talk a lot about the Commissioner of Public Lands race, but there's a lot at stake here. And, you know, in some ways, Jamie Hoover Butler supports a lot of the things that Hillary France has done. I think in some ways she might differ. But one of the reasons the Seattle Times, as I had read there, supports her is Dave Upthegrove would stop bar logging on tens of thousands of acres of trust lands, about 77,000 acres total, actually. And Jamie Hoover Butler says she would not do that. And one of the reasons is those trust lands and the logging that happens on those trust lands is actually pretty vital to our economy and some of our infrastructure. So the American Forest Resource Council put out these little graphics that sort of help explain this. The social and economic impacts of closing 77,000 acres of public working forests. They said it would lead to $1.35 billion in lost revenue to public services and workers over 15 years, including K-12 school construction. Because again, when you have some of these trust lands and you could go on there and you can get some of this timber that can be used in school construction, that means you're not bringing it in from overseas on barges and God knows the emissions that are created from that. Also helps with hospitals, ports, libraries, fire departments, school districts, state capitol campus, universities, etc. Let's see. Let's move ahead to the next one. It says specifically in Thurston County, if they were to move forward with Dave Upthegrove's plan of, you know, closing another 77,000 acres of DNR state trust lands, it would have, this is just for Thurston County, $11.36 million in impacts, $7 million in impact to schools, $2 million in impacts to county services, $500,000 in impacts to the Timberland Regional Library, $700,000 in impacts to two local fire districts, and $280,000 in impacts to the Port of Olympia. And, you know, the thing I don't get about it, that's why I always say environmentalists in quotes. I don't believe the people who, you know, support shutting down timber harvests and all of this public trust land, I don't think they're actually environmentalists. Because again, you're using, first of all, you're managing the resources, because if you just allow those to go to old growth, over time, they're going to sequester less carbon. So it's not actually beneficial to the environment, as beneficial as it would be to manage those forests, to use some of the forests for logging, for public good projects, right? So if you're going to let them go to old growth, yeah, it'll sequester carbon for a little while, but eventually that goes down and that goes down and that goes down. So I don't think that that's environmentalist to just say, oh, anti-logging, no logging ever. That makes no sense. And then if you're not using the wood that we have from these trust fund lands to help with school construction, fire departments, libraries, etc., where do you freaking think that wood is coming from? Where's the wood coming from? Like, are you going to, what do they call it with the little machines? Are you going to, 3D print a school? Are you going to 3D print a fire station? No, you have to get those resources from somewhere. So if they're not coming from our state trust lands, where are they coming from? Well, some of it's coming from overseas. So you're really telling me it's better for the environment and better for our country and for our state and for our economy if we go overseas and have them on a big old ship send back some timber for us as opposed to getting it out from one of the forests in our public trust lands? No, that makes no sense. So they're not environmentalists. They're fringe extremist activists. Vote for Jamie Hoover Butler. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our segment, Unbelievable. First, our friend Mike Boggs, a retired Seattle police officer, he decided to retire, sell his home he'd lived in for 30 years and move to Arizona. And because he heard it on our show, he reached out to our friend Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. He was very happy with the result.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price you want? Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. He mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. Wes is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
Yeah, and he's now in sunny Arizona, away from crappy Seattle. So, no, Seattle's not crappy. I don't want to diss Seattle. It's just, you know, being a Seattle police officer is not great. I bet you being retired in Arizona is much better. Anyway, sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right. Are you an exceptional white guy? Well, good news. You can help join a movement to elect Kamala Harris and fight for social justice. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Oh my God. Do I have to do this? So this is in the Seattle Times, and it's by a Seattle Times columnist who's sort of known for like stories like this, Naomi Ishaka. I saw this and I just thought, man, that's an ad for a low-T commercial. Now look, for the record,
I thought, swipe left.
Goals like, is it left to reject them?
I think, yeah, swipe right is good.
So I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know, babe. Just in case my husband's watching, I'd have no idea, right? All right. So the for the record, I think it's okay if you're a man and you're liberal. Like, I'm not, there's many liberal men. I don't think all of you have low T, but I think when you have a guy who needs to go out of his way to show to women or other people how absolutely woke he is, that to me just screams low T.
Wussification.
Yeah, wussification. Some people find it perfectly acceptable to just live your life, be a good human, you know, support people regardless of the color of their skin, respect them regardless of whether they're a man or a woman, and not form a group of exceptional white guys to talk about in a circle how great you are and how woke you are.
If they were creating this group for anything other than what they're creating it for, if it was a white man for anything else,
yeah,
it would be horribly racist and terrible. But because they're white men for Kamala Harris,
well, technically the name of the group is White Men Against MAGA.
Mm-hmm.
White Men Against MAGA. Let's take a look here. Group looks for, quote, tons of white guys. Yeah, that's about what I thought it would look like. Tons of white guys to support social justice. So this, again, from Naomi Ishaka. I got to figure out how to say her last name because I don't want to butcher it. I'm not butchering it on purpose. I wrote about the two campaigns' contrasting approaches to masculinity in September, and afterward, a reader named Chris Crass reached out to share the work he and others have been doing to organize and mobilize white men to elect the first woman president. We want large numbers. We want tons of white guys to be involved in this work, Crass said. We don't want 100 exceptional white guys around the country. We want tens of thousands of white guys that are actively part of positive justice movements and values. Went on to say, in progressive spaces, there is often a belief that white men should take a back seat and support the leadership of people of color. This sentiment is grounded in reaction to the very real history of women of color, in particular doing much of the heavy lifting in social justice spaces, then being taken for granted and their leadership sidelined and dismissed. What ends up happening, Crass said, is that white men end up not shouldering their part of the load. Crass said it's important for progressive white men in liberal places like Seattle to resist the idea that they have everything figured out and their main job is to call out other white men who they feel are less woke than they are. What is this? What is this absolute word soup? Like, what is their goal? I don't get it. I don't get it.
It's for white men to get involved in social justice issues. So they want, after all of these years of telling white men they can't have things, they aren't qualified for this, they're hiring others for different reasons, but for reasons of, because they're not white. And now they're like, wait. Oh, wait, there's a lot of white men out there. We better try to get some back on board to vote for Kamala. I think that's what it is. I mean, they're realizing, so right now I think they said in the country, they're saying at the beginning of this article, they mentioned most women are voting for Kamala Harris and most men are voting for Trump. Well, most men in this country right now are white. And so they're like, well, crap, that's the only white.
That's us.
We better bring them back in.
We got to get back. Can you pull back up this picture? Because I just think it's funny. So it says the picture is Mike Beebe left, a Seattle facilitator and trainer, and a member of White Men Against MAGA, takes a selfie at a gathering of White Men Against MAGA. What does he train them in? Can you imagine being at this meeting? Can you imagine being
anti-racism?
So you got a white guy with his ponytail, which again, fine. Are they drinking Rainiers? Rainier? They're sitting around with crackers, like hummus, crackers, and beer. That's fine. And he's training them to be a member of White Men Against MAGA? Like how somebody needs to listen. We have a lot of white men who watch the show. This is your assignment. Infiltrate this group. infiltrate this group and tell us what happens at one of these meetings. Somebody can do that, right? White Men Against MAGA. Mike Beebe is a facilitator for the Seattle division of White Men Against MAGA.
Well, I guarantee it starts with a land pledge.
Yeah, first it's a land pledge, and then you have to go around and talk about your white, you know, toxic privilege. White masculinity, how white privilege has individually benefited you. So that's a couple of the things that I'm sure are going to happen. I'm just curious what happens after that. So somebody will do this. I know somebody will do this. Infiltrate this group. I suggest, I mean, maybe a man bun, like that could, like Matt Walsh, all of the documentary, Am I Racist? Yeah. Like go for maybe that look, a little man bun, something flannel, like Patagonia, something style. Yeah, and then just say, hey, I'm here, white man, I'm a white man against MAGA. And again, I don't have an issue with you being a white dude and being against Donald Trump. There's many, many white dudes. I know many of them who are against Donald Trump. But the fact that you feel the need to sit around in a backyard and talk about your toxic whiteness and how you're going to support a woman because that makes you like more masculine is right. Super strange.
And how you can talk more white men into supporting Kamala Harris.
This is really strange stuff, guys. Super strange. This is like a cult. It's like a cult. It's very weird. All right. We're going to talk about some national news coming up, including I've really had this change of heart about Liz Cheney. So I want to discuss that with all of you. I don't know if it's in a good way or a bad way.
You had a change of heart?
Yeah, kind of.
Recently?
Like 10 minutes ago.
Wow.
I don't know. We're going to talk about it. Okay. First, if you are, you know, your family's struggling financially, if you're looking at your budget, figuring out where you could cut, have First Mark Insurance take another look at your insurance because you might be paying for insurance you don't need. They might be able to save you a little money on your insurance because you can't just get rid of your insurance, right? But you want to make sure that you only have what you need to be able to cover your family, that you're properly protected. But a lot of people, when they do the First Mark Challenge, they realize, as Mike and I did, that we were paying for insurance that didn't make sense for what we need. And so being able to cut that out, adjust our insurance through First Mark was really helpful. And the best part is it's totally free to do the First Mark Challenge, and you never pay First Mark insurance for their services. So to me, it's really a no-brainer. Undivided viewer Michelle sent us a message saying, thank you for recommending First Mark. She said that her and her husband got their renewal notice for their current insurance provider for the next 6 months. It went from $3,000 to $8,000. So she finally is like, we got to do the First Mark Challenge. They worked with Brad at First Mark. He saved them more than 50%. She said, we can now continue our discussions about getting a travel trailer. Love it. So take the First Mark Challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, in order for me to set up my concern, change of heart about Liz Cheney, I need to play this clip first. It's pretty long, right? It's like 2.5 minutes. Mm-hmm. But okay, so Kamala Harris and Liz Cheney had this town hall style thing. And so they're sitting there, and it's is that Maria? That's what's his face's ex-wife.
Yes.
What's her name? Maria, not Sharapova. That's the.
I know it.
Yeah, yeah. The what's the guy's name? The Terminator's ex-wife. Arnold Schwarzenegger's ex-wife, and she's moderating. Maria Shriver, right? Thank you. Yes. And Kamala Harris goes off on 2.5 minutes of absolute nonsense with Liz Cheney just sitting there, looking honestly kind of uncomfortable. So I want to play Kamala Harris's whole answer again. With Liz Cheney, Republican, now turned to be a never Trumper, sitting next to her.
Let me, if I can just speak to the what people are feeling. We cannot despair. We cannot despair. You know, the nature of a democracy is such that I think there's a duality. On the one hand, there's an incredible strength when our democracy is intact, an incredible strength in what it does to protect the freedoms and rights of its people. Oh, there's great strength in that. And it is very fragile. It is only as strong as our willingness to fight for it.
And
so that's the moment we're in. And I say do not despair, because in a democracy, as long as we can keep it, in our democracy, the people, every individual has the power to make a decision about what this will be. And so let's not feel powerless.
Okay.
Let's not let overwhelming nature of this all make us feel powerless, because then we have been defeated. And that's not our character as the American people. We are not one to be defeated. We rise to a moment. And we stand on broad shoulders of people who have fought this fight before for our country. And in many ways, let us look at the challenge then that we are being presented and not be overwhelmed by it. The baton is now in our hands to fight for, not against, but for this country we love. That's what we have the power to do. So let's own that. Dare I say, be joyful in what we will do in the process of owning that, which is knowing that we can and will build community and coalitions and remind people that we're all in this together. Let's not let the overwhelming nature of this strip us of our strength. That's how I feel about this.
What was that? What did she say? I'm really like speechless at the depths of the stupidity. I don't. What was that? How do you get to that point in your career and string sentences together like that? It makes no sense to me. So I think, like, look, I didn't play that clip just to make fun of Kamala Harris for being completely like air, you know, there's nothing there. But because undivided, whatever. But it's Liz Cheney sitting next to her that really drives me nuts. I, you know, and of course I used to be like anti-Trump, but I have always had a level of respect for the Republicans who opted to impeach former President Donald Trump. Because I think in many of the instances, they did what they really truly believed in the moment was the right thing to do. You know, most of them had supported Donald Trump in the 2020 election. And then they voted just a couple months later to impeach him. And so I have to believe that the only reason that you would do that is you really believe in your heart of hearts that it was the right thing to do. And you did it knowing that there could be a political price to pay, as there was for Liz Cheney. So when somebody does something because they just believe mind, body and soul that it is the right thing to do and they're standing on their morals and their principles, I don't fault them for that. And so I haven't faulted Liz Cheney for that. I think that it's a hard thing to do to take a stand against anyone in your own political party. But then I see that clip, right? And I'm like, she is smarter than that. She knows that that is someone who is not fit or up to the task of running the country. And then I was reminded of something Liz Cheney tweeted out back in August of 2020. So think about August of 2020. So this is before January 6th, right? She's still supporting Donald Trump for the presidency. You know, you still have a few candidates in the race on the Democratic side. So it's before the Democratic National Convention. In Seattle, we're in the summer of love. So things are really bad here. And Liz Cheney tweets this out. Kamala Harris is a radical liberal who would raise taxes, take away guns and health insurance, and explode the size and power of the federal government. She wants to recreate America in the image of what's happening on the streets of Portland and Seattle. We won't give her the chance. So Liz Cheney at the time is very concerned about Kamala Harris. Was this actually, she would have been Biden's running mate by then, right? I'm trying to think the time in the country. So it would have been a few months before the election. So she had run for president. That would have been around the time maybe he chose her as a running mate. I'd have to, can you look at the date where he announced Kamala Harris as running mate?
Oh, sure.
But either way, she's clearly very concerned about Kamala Harris being so extreme that she's a radical liberal. She'd raise taxes, take away health insurance, explode the size of the government, and she would recreate America in the image of what's happening on the streets of Portland and Seattle. We know exactly what was happening on the streets of Portland, Seattle. It was deadly. It's, I mean, not just... Do you have the date?
It was August 11th.
Oh, yeah. So she's responding directly to Biden choosing Kamala Harris as his VP. And we know what was happening on the streets of Portland, Seattle, not only the riots and that crisis, but also the homelessness, the crime, all of that. I have a hard time considering watching that video, reading that tweet, what Liz Cheney is doing now to be a principled stance. I just can't anymore. To me, looking at the totality of what's going on, it's personal at this point. I mean, Donald Trump has been very nasty to Liz Cheney. And so I see someone who is willing to accept someone like Kamala Harris, who in her own words, just 4 years ago, is a radical extremist who would ruin the country. So she's willing and actively supporting someone now who she knows will try to remake the country, including her state of Wyoming, in the image of Seattle and Portland. And she's willing to support that over Donald Trump. To me, I'd feel much differently if she was just out there still, you know, doesn't support Donald Trump, but not sitting side by side with Kamala Harris, someone who just 4 years ago she said would turn the rest of the country into Seattle and Portland. So she's willing to do that to the American people. She's willing and actively trying to help someone who would Seattle, Portland, San Francisco-ify the rest of the country, who would raise taxes, who would take away health care, who would bloat and grow the size of the federal government, all in the name of, like, Trump bad, and all in the name of, like, her frustration over January 6th. So now I have a hard time taking those two things and seeing her as a principled person. I think the impeachment vote she took was because she believed it was the right thing to do in the moment. I still think that because there's no other motivation, right? I don't know what the motivation would be. But in the time since, and now the options being Kamala Harris or Donald Trump, for her to be campaigning with Kamala Harris, campaigning for Kamala Harris, knowing that she would destroy the country, knowing that her policies would lead to more deaths, would lead to more unrest, because she said it 4 years ago, I don't view Liz Cheney the same way. It's really hard for me to continue to see what she's, the choice she's making, and square it with what she knows it would do to the country. All right. Speaking of the presidential election, Republicans need to knock it off. I am so concerned that Republicans, especially on social media or on Fox News, they really believe that this is going to be an easy win for Donald Trump. And it's freaking me out. I mean, you see all on social media, people sharing the polls, what the Poly Market is saying, all these articles about Democrats are bracing for possibility of losing North Carolina and Michigan, and Elon Musk is sharing it, all these big conservative accounts. And I watched Fox News last night. They think after the McDonald's thing that Trump is just going to run away with it. Every Republican in the country on the national level, locally, when it comes to the governor's race and whatever it is, everyone needs to act like you're losing by 30 points. Everyone should be acting, should be campaigning like you're losing by 30 points. Because if you don't, I mean, look at Trump's the perfect. It blows my mind that Trump supporters would get so excited about polling, considering in 2016, they were giving Trump like a 1% chance of winning and he won. So, you know, the polling is crap. Some changes have been made since polling in 2016 to hopefully avoid such a weird lopsided issue. But you know polling can't be trusted. I don't get the point of celebrating polling. I don't get the point, knowing what happened in 2016, of celebrating polling, putting people in this false state of confidence where maybe they're like, oh, Trump's doing so well. He's got the momentum. Maybe I don't need to make a donation to this campaign. Maybe I don't need to make phone calls for this campaign. Maybe I don't need to go door knocking. Maybe I don't even need to vote. The worst thing Republicans can do right now is act like this thing is wrapped up, with just a couple weeks to go to the election. So act like you're losing. All right, we're going to get to our daily subscriber show poll, questions and comments. First, given everything happening across the country, you need to have someone managing your retirement portfolio who's focused on mitigating risk. Look, you only get one retirement. You do not want to put it in needless jeopardy. We've all envisioned what our retirement will look like. You've saved for it. You've planned for it. Bulwark Capital and Zach Abraham, the chief investment officer, along with his analysts, they track current events closely so they can adjust to market risks every single day to help shield your portfolio as much as possible. Risk management is Bulwark's number one focus because you only get one retirement. You only get one retirement. You need someone who's actively managing it. So you can learn about Bulwark's risk management strategy in their free Common Sense Investing Guide. Get yours right now by going to knowyourriskradio.com. That's knowyourriskradio.com. And of course, Zach joins us on the show to talk about economic news every Thursday. So we'll talk to him in a couple days. Investment advisory services offered through Truck Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or any specific security. Any references to performance of securities are thought to be materially accurate, and actual performances may differ. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24308. All right, our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, kind of in reference to the story we talked about near the top of the show about like the ability to print these replacement ballots, even if you're using a name that isn't a registered voter. I asked you, how concerned are you about actual instances of fraud influencing outcomes in the November election? Very concerned, somewhat concerned, or not really concerned? What about you, Nicole?
I mean, like we've said on the show, I'm concerned because it really feels like they are not going to let some people win, like Trump. But also in the state, it's really scary. I mean, they're willing to lie, cheat. I don't know what they're not willing to do.
Yeah, I see what you're saying there, because there are ways short of election tampering,
right,
where they can influence the outcome of an election. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're doing, right? So they're lying in political ads about the initiatives. Bob Ferguson, every ad he's released is a lie.
They passed laws to make it more difficult to understand initiatives.
Literally.
They passed laws.
100%. So you might think of, that's a really good point. You might think of election tampering in a more traditional sense, like, oh, they're going to change my ballot and all this stuff, or, you know, throw the red ballots away. But actually what they're doing is much more nefarious, mm-hmm. and it's actually blatantly out in the open. Like you said, they passed a law specifically so that they can make these initiatives harder to be successful, because they put in there, you have to put like, oh, if you repeal capital gains, you know, again, kittens and children will be killed. It's essentially what they say.
Funding, they'll find funding for that in other places if you take it from this. So it doesn't, it's so sleazy and gross. And I wouldn't support it if the other party did it either.
Yeah.
It's really sleazy.
Well, we didn't, right? When they went to file a lawsuit against mm-hmm. the Omni ballot situation in the Commissioner of Public Lands race, I explicitly said to Jim Walsh and on this show that they shouldn't seek to nullify the votes that were cast using Omni ballot, because I thought that would be improper, even though they would be votes for Democrats. So we've been morally consistent on that. So mm-hmm. I think that's a really good point. They are influencing
the
election.
They are tampering.
And they're doing it right in front of our faces. But I'm talking here more so about like election tampering, election fraud. This is a really split poll. 42% saying very concerned, 41% saying somewhat, 18% saying not really. I'm not really concerned about ballot tampering or instances of like voting fraud that would impact the outcome. But I am very concerned about what Nicole pointed out there.
I'm concerned about people trying to. Whether it gets through, I don't know.
Well,
I would hope I'm going to have to trust the system.
That's the issue. You cannot stop every instance mm-hmm. of attempted voter fraud. You can't stop someone from stealing ballots from mailboxes and filling them out and sending them in. You can only hope that the system can catch it, right? Which is sort of what we're talking about with it today. A few comments from you guys. Jackie says, not really. The only thing that would make me pause is if we get somewhere in the 90% turnout in an election and we see no change. I think it's hard to claim fraud with 30% turnout or 50% turnout. The people that always turn out are the loudmouth activists. So unless more everyday folk participate, it's hard to really say, because your data set is skewed. Heidi said, the fact that people are registered to vote at the DMV gives a gateway to people who are not in this country, and the confusion that they cannot vote. So that was another issue we brought up. Our state doesn't actually require proof of citizenship when you register to vote. So it's another example of where they want to catch it on the back end. But unless you actually find out that someone who's not documented was able to register to vote, then it just sort of happens. And yeah, it's a crime, but are they holding people accountable for that? So that's an area of concern. Harold Burns, remember, it's not the person that voted that had the power it's the person who counts the votes that has the ultimate power. So Harold's a little concerned. Scott Pierce, ever since Dino Rossi versus Christine Gregoire, I don't trust them. She won the third recount. Some ballots were found, as I recall. The fix is in. I mean, I agree with what Nicole said about, I still am concerned that Donald Trump is not going to make it to Election Day. And then Bob Ferguson is so vindictive and petty. If we get into a recount territory situation, I'm not sure that would be handled fairly either.
Well, and again, I don't know what they're not willing to do. So it's just really scary. The closer we get, the scarier it is. And
yeah.
I just feel exhausted and defeated, scared. And we're not even there yet.
Very similar breakdown, almost identical over on Locals. Dan says, also note, the counties and state basically don't care who prints ballots. There are millions floating around. They just assume the signature matching will catch everything, so no need to keep track of ballots at all. Kristen says, I didn't know I could track a ballot till you said something. I still don't know where or how to do that. Well, I think it depends on the county some, you know, I know that on my ballot, you get a little like a QR code where you can sort of track your ballot. But I think on the Secretary of State's website, you can track your ballot.
Oh, I think everybody gets the little thing on the top. They of do. The ballot.
Okay. I just know if it was different. I think you can track it on the, go to your county elections page, but if not, you can, yeah. So I have vote.wa.gov. You can log in. And if you log in, I'm just going to do mine really quick because I want to show you what you can get on there. You just have to have your name and your address, or your name and your date of birth. So,
which is also scary. That's all you need.
Yeah. So it has, for instance, right here, your ballot was mailed to you Wednesday, October 16th. It looks like it hasn't been dropped off yet, but it'll have a little, then it has like my voter registration information. It has my voting history. So it tells me like what elections I voted in. So yeah, vote.wa.gov. And then you can just sign in and you can track everything right there, and it'll tell you when your ballot's been received and if it's been accepted, so you know you don't have like a signature issue or something like that. So please do that. All right, get some other comments. Carrie Harris with a $50 super chat. Wow, sugar mama, love nice it today. Thank you. Says keep up the great work, we appreciate it. Kelly Dowell Tarp, it's extremely frustrating that it feels they did this on purpose. I'm sharing as much as I can to group and community Facebook pages on the initiative language. It concerns me that the initiatives were written this way to confuse voters on purpose. Vote yes, pay less to have choices. Matt Gilbert, hopefully there are some libs who love being taxed who just instinctively vote yes. Yeah, I think there might be a little like back and forth. A little both. But again, it favors the no vote. Initiatives just do. Mm-hmm. Because most people, if they're confused, vote no. So that's hard to get around.
Especially when it says, oh, it funds schools and funds parks. And do you want to take that away?
No. Rachel, I'm furious. Yes, I do. Rachel, I'm furious over the verbiage such as Initiative 2124. It says, this measure would provide employees must elect to keep coverage and could opt out at any time. Why use the word must instead of can? Who wrote this? Yeah, see, there's little tiny ones that make it confusing. And like, why wouldn't you say, this measure would provide employees must elect to keep coverage? Why wouldn't you say, this measure would allow employees to opt out of coverage? Right. That doesn't make any sense at all. Weiss Castle, the provisional ballot should be emailed to only registered voters with a verified email address on file. April Hughes, I have another concern. If the Omni ballot has, that's the system King County uses, has access to the voter rolls database, then who is to say a hacker can't then be able to create, edit, and delete voters on the voter rolls? I don't know. Jenna, I still get a ballot sent to my parents' house, even though I haven't lived there for 10 years. And yes, I've told them I no longer live there. I told you I had a brother who lived with me, moved back to Minnesota, registered as a voter there. And I got a ballot for him for like 3 or 4 elections, had to actually contact the elections office to stop getting a ballot for him, which was an opportunity for fraud. A person who was fraudulently inclined could have filled it out, sent it back in, and they would have not been the wiser unless the signatures didn't match.
The signature, but how? I don't even know when they got my signature. Like, how do they verify
when
the
you
signature?
Register
it's so
to
interesting.
Vote.
Interesting.
Right? It's when you register. And my signature is the same I have on my driver's license. And
but, I mean, did you not copy your parents' signatures here and there back in high school?
So you're saying people's signatures change.
Well,
you
might change and are easily, you know, copied.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. But then, like, if you went to actually fill out a ballot that somebody had filled out for you, they'd be like, oh, whose ballot is real, you know? So all right, good comments per the usual, and with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Yes, just another totally unscripted town hall with Kamala Harris. We played a clip from it earlier, but this is what happened at the beginning of that town hall hosted by Maria Shriver when an audience member asked if they were going to get to ask questions of the vice president.
You're not, unfortunately. We have some predetermined questions, and hopefully I'll be able to ask some of the questions that might be in your head. I hope so.
Yeah, you're just props. You notice how they put like a rainbow of people behind Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. It was like every color of the rainbow, man, woman, skinny, fat, everything represented. Just props. You can't ask questions, though. We can't have that. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Get those ballots in. Do not make the parties waste a second of their time trying to harass you to get your ballot in. Just get that dang thing in. Vote yes, pay less. UndividedPod.com, if you'd like to support our show, we sure would appreciate the support, especially if you've been, I don't know, watching the live shows for free. just sort of, you know, on the backs of our paid subscribers. But before the election, you're thinking this is a good time to sign up and be a subscriber. We agree. Just $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. We'll see you back here on the live show tomorrow at noon.